68 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm very excited about the interview that I'm about to share with you, and I'm very grateful to my brother Steve for helping to make this interview possible. He suggested that I might enjoy speaking with a Facebook friend of his named Matthew Paul Turner, a wonderfully gifted writer, photographer, and journalist, responsible for an array of really interesting and illuminating books, including Provocative Faith, Walking Away from Ordinary, and The Christian Culture Survival Guide. Matthew Paul Turner also served for a time as editor of CCM magazine, the letters CCM standing for Contemporary Christian Music. In more recent years, Matthew Paul Turner has devoted much of his energy and considerable talents towards the crafting of wonderful picture books for children. Books with titles like When God Made You, When God Made the World, When God Made Light, When I Pray for You, and All the Colors of Christmas. But Matthew Paul Turner's most recent book is actually not entirely his own, but marks the completion of work begun by another gifted writer named Rachel Held Evans. Unfortunately, Rachel Held Evans fell ill and unexpectedly died at the age of 37 with a book titled What Is God Like still on the drawing board. Rachel Held Evans and Matthew Paul Turner were friends, and Matthew was approached and asked if he would be willing to take what Rachel had begun and bring it to completion. He was indeed willing, and the result is a breathtakingly beautiful and moving book, again titled What Is God Like? We talk in this interview not only about this particular book and this intriguing project, but also about a rather dramatic change in Matthew Paul Turner's personal life, which occurred last summer. The book again is What Is God Like? And Matthew Paul Turner, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg. Grateful to be here.
Before we talk specifically about this latest book, I wonder if you could just talk for a moment about the transition you made. I'm not trying to assume that you shut one door and opened another and left, you know, other kinds of books entirely behind you. But at some point, it appears that you shifted your creative energies towards creating these wonderful, colorful picture books for children. When did that shift occur, and did it occur for any particular reason?
Well, after my daughter was born, Adeline, she's my second child, and I was already starting to read to my my oldest, Elias, and, you know, anytime I read to them books about God, I was always just, I found myself self-editing the things that I would read to them. And I found that their interest in the books about faith were just a little bit less than their interest in other books. Now, sometimes that's normal just because, you know, that it's hard for kids to grasp faith. But I just, I grew up, you know, rhyming was my very first connection to writing. As a kid, I was constantly writing song lyrics and poems. And so I took a chance on trying to write a book about God for children. And I came up with this idea. And it was, at the time, the book was called When God Made Light. And I took it to my agent took it to every publisher, and every publisher said no. And so I ended up self-publishing that book, and we ended up selling all the copies that we printed, which we had printed like 5,000. One of the publishers came back and said, hey, let's do this. And so I found that I have found a lot of creative energy in writing for kids, which is something that has surprised me. And so it is the connection that people have felt to these books has been so profound that it has made switching a kind of like switching gears or, transitioning, if you will, a really beautiful kind of life-changing thing for me too. Certainly it was because I had kids, and then it was sort of birthed out of this idea of people connecting to the work.
I think some people make assumptions about how hard it is to write a 300-page book meant for adults versus mm-hmm. writing a 20-page book intended for young children, and that the latter would be a whole lot easier than the former. And perhaps in some respects, maybe it is, but I think the average person, myself included, probably does not begin to understand sort of the array of challenging choices that are part of crafting a really first-rate children's book. As someone who has done this now time and time again, you know better than anybody the nature of those challenges. What are they?
Well, I think it's, the big challenges are just finding a topic that resonates, that will resonate with children, that you as an adult can kind of grasp in a way that is childlike. I think that instilling your words with wonder and whimsy and just lots of imagination, you know, it's, I have written books that are 70, 80,000 words long, and now my biggest focus is on books that are roughly 1,000 words. And I spend almost as much time on these 1,000-word books as I do from a, you know, I mean, not as intense time, but it takes me six to 8 months to finish a book that is 1,000 words, and it would take me, you know, 6 to 8 months to finish a book that is, you know, 50 to 60,000 words. So but it's just a different type of writing. It's getting into it's becoming childlike and, you know, embracing the ideas that children think about and look for and trying to see it from their perspective. And it's about introducing them to new words, but also giving them enough words that they already understand that they can connect to. And so finding that balance and finding the rhymes, like most of my books rhyme, though this new one doesn't, but the majority of my books have a rhyming scheme to them. And so making sure that it's, that I'm not just like putting down on paper throwaway rhymes, that these rhymes are always adding to the idea, always lending themselves to bringing the topic to the child in a way that is easy for them to understand. I think that's it's more difficult than one might think, and I for some reason find so much life in it. Like mm-hmm. I really enjoy it.
Mm. I'm glad you touched a little more deeply on the matter of the rhyming. I'm reminded of when I read a ton of books in this line of work, and so often when I'm reading a book about, for instance, being a great leader or something like that, that you know, often the framework of the book will be that there are these three things you need to be a good leader, and it's excellence and educated and energetic or whatever it might be, but you know, the
right.
three E's of whatever. And I'm always a little suspicious because I think, well, is that, I mean, I know they all start with E, so there's something kind of fun about that, but is that really the three things? I mean, I find myself kind of mistrusting a book that values alliteration to that extent, or just, you know, three
yeah.
words starting with the same letter. So anyway, but I'm just thinking now about, I've never thought about this before, in the context of rhyming, although it is mm-hmm. obviously something that gives you great joy and you think it gives readers, you know, kind of an extra layer of delight. Do you ever find that it is also, in a sense, kind of a vice in which you find yourself needing to say something really important, but you need a word that rhymes with artichoke or whatever it might be. I mean, can it be a source of frustration?
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, that's one of the reasons why it takes so long to complete a thought. And I'm very particular about how my words rhyme and making sure that when I read the words out loud, that people are not going to stumble over them. And while I'm hardly perfect at that, but I certainly put a lot of time and energy and thought into how all of that plays out. And yes, very much so. There have been times when I've had to throw away lines that I love because there was no way to complete them because I could not get a rhyme to work effectively.
We are speaking today on The Morning Show with Matthew Paul Turner, a prolific author of a wide array of terrific books. He also had a hand in National Geographic's The Story of God with Morgan Freeman. Most recently, a great deal of his creative energies have been directed towards the creation of really beautiful children's picture books. And I should mention that you come at these books from a Christian perspective. How would you describe the audience for which your books are intended? I mean, for instance, someone not of the Christian faith, should they be thinking about at least some of your books being perhaps appropriate for their own children, or maybe not so much?
If the term God is in any way, shape, or form a part of a family's vernacular, my books will lend themselves to being celebrated or read. I have had families who are Muslim and families who are of a Jewish heritage and families who are of a Buddhist background all read, you know, all buy my books and find a lot of joy in them. But again, I don't think that, you know, my books aren't for everyone, but if the word or the term God is a part of how you talk about spiritual things, then they would lend themselves to be a part of, you know, your personal story, I think, for many people. I know that it's spiritual topics are very personal, and so it's, you know, I would certainly recommend them reading them first and seeing if they fit. But I have found lots, a variety of people have connected to my work that I would have, you know, that's surprising on one hand, but also just really awesome. I love that when people that, you know, outside of the Christian faith have find value in my books. So I think that's a beautiful compliment.
And I would certainly think that that applies to this most recent book, which we're going to talk about now, a book called What is God Like? A book which
yes.
Was begun by a highly regarded writer by the name of Rachel Held Evans, and who unfortunately passed away quite suddenly and unexpectedly at the age of 37. First of all, I gather from the foreword to this book that Rachel was somebody that you knew.
I knew Rachel very well.
Explain a little more about your connection with her and her family.
Rachel was a prolific writer, and when her first book came, or was when she was starting to work on her first book, a mutual friend of ours introduced Rachel and I, and because she was looking for people, other writers who would read her book and potentially endorse it. And so I was one of the very first people she reached out to, and we became friends. Like, we ended up doing a couple book festivals together, and we did several speaking engagements. We, you know, she is like Rachel and I, she lived in East Tennessee, and I live in like the middle part of Tennessee. And so we, you know, certainly were close enough where we got to see each other on a regular basis. But she was far talented, far beyond her age. Like, she was not just a wonderful writer. She was a incredible speaker, a strong advocate for women and people of color and LGBTQ people, and like really challenging the church's many rules and laws that they would create that would limit certain groups of people. And Rachel like just was a phenomenal advocate for breaking down those rules and breaking down those laws, and, you know, trying to give people freedom. And I was a friend, a dear friend, but I was also just a great admirer of her work. Mm-hmm. I watched Rachel evolve into the person of influence that she became. You know, I mean, she ended up being on President Obama's Faith Initiative, and after she passed away, you know, Hillary Clinton mentioned her on Twitter and, you know, mourned her death. And so, like, her reach became far greater than any of us would have thought, you know, when she and I first met. So I knew her husband, Dan. I was much closer to Rachel at the time, but Dan, after Rachel's passing, Dan and I have become really good friends. Rachel loved my children's books, and it was an honor to be even asked to take her idea and bring it across the finishing line.
The book that we are talking about, that final book for Rachel, and your most recent book, What Is God Like? So tell us, first of all, anything that you know about the genesis of this particular book. That's an interesting choice of words. I didn't even intend it. But,
yeah.
the status of this particular project at the time that Rachel fell ill.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rachel was a new mom. She, at the time of her death, she was still breastfeeding her second baby. And she had another young son. And so, like, this was when it came to the things that she talked about, which were spirituality and faith. Like, she wanted her kids to be introduced to God in a different way than how she was introduced to God. That and so it for some like it made it makes a lot of sense for Rachel to have begun thinking about like concepts that might have been, you know, for children. And so when I visited Rachel for the first time at the hospital, you know, Dan and I were sitting around talking, and he started talking about these children's books ideas that she had started. And I was just so excited. I mean, as a children's book author, I was excited because that was my world, but also the idea of being able to read Rachel's books to my own kids, like, just was beyond exciting. So, you know, she had just outlined a handful of ideas or concepts, and taken them to her editor, her agent, and they were very, very raw and very, very in the beginning stages, but they were simple, they all answered like big questions in a very simple, practical way. And this first book is the one that was really the most well thought out, the most well like outlined. And it was the all of the ideas and the thoughts were there. The theology was there, the outline was there, and I just basically had to make the words pretty, make the ideas pretty, and make them sing. And so it is it was just such a joy to take somebody's words who I just had so much love and respect for, and bring it to fruition. It was a very emotional experience for me, a very healing experience for me. Losing Rachel was it was definitely impactful to so many people who loved and, loved her, of course, but it was, what a healing experience to take her words and bring them to life. And so,
can you tell us a little bit more about the nature of this invitation? I mean, to do this, to complete this book that Rachel had begun, did that invitation come from her publisher or her agent or her husband?
Yes, absolutely. My editor was in the beginning stages of considering publishing Rachel's children's books. This was 2 months, 3 months after Rachel passed away. And she, my then editor called me and said, "Hey, we are thinking about doing this. If we do this, would you be at all interested in helping us finish them?" And I told her, I was like, "Yes, but I would need to I would want to talk to Dan, and I'd want to talk to several of Rachel's friends." And so Dan had already planned on talking to me at some point. So he and I, ended up meeting, and he was like, "I know for a fact that if Rachel was here, the one thing I know about Rachel is that she would have reached out to you and asked for your thoughts, because she loved your books. She loved that you were finding success in writing these books, and she would have wanted to learn from how you did things. And so I think it only feels natural for you if you're willing to take this on." It was a beautiful honor. I can't put into words hardly the amount of time and the energy and the tears that I poured into these 1,000 words. It was beautiful, and it was painful, and it was, I think that people, especially the people who knew and loved Rachel, are going to be just really moved by this book. And it's been beautiful to see the response already, even though it's, not even out yet.
It's a breathtakingly beautiful book. I'm very, very excited. The book, in its essential framework, likens God to all kinds of different things in the world. God is like an eagle, a river, the stars, a shepherd, a fort, a gardener, the flame of a candle, and so on. That's just a few. And I'm just quoting kind of the top of each of these sections, in which you go on to explain then how it is that God is sort of like an eagle and sort of like a river and so on. Had all of those specifics already been conceived by Rachel, or was that kind of an incomplete list on which you expanded? And I'm curious to know about just how that list was created. I think it's a great list, but it's also not an easy list to assemble when one is talking about such a profound topic or profound question.
Right. Rachel had probably 70% of the ideas, like how she imagined God being like, those things, they were already written down. They would the what came after them and how they were explained were like much all of those ideas were much more raw. And so that's where how I came up with the other ideas is I reached out to several of her friends who she respected as theologians and respected as individuals, and asked them to kind of give me one or two ideas that might work well with this list of other ideas. And so, and then I took their ideas that they gave me and I brought them, I defined them and brought, colored them in with words, and it became a little bit of, I didn't want to add to Rachel's idea in a vacuum. I wanted help. I wanted it to be a communal thing a little bit of people in her circle who loved her as much as I did. And I think that was ended up being a really good way to kind of embrace the diversity that's in the book, the diversity of God, the diversity that Rachel promoted in the sense of how she thought and the people she fought for. And so I think that it just made sense for me to bring other people into the idea, into helping create the idea. And so that definitely was a life-giving thing. Like, it really brought life to the book. And so I added any word that I added with great care, knowing Rachel's, the thing that I always tell people about Rachel is that when she covered something, she covered it with such, with a thorough, well-researched thing. Like, if there was a topic that she was going to lend her voice to, she always did her homework like well beyond most people. And so I wanted to make sure that, because even though this was a children's book and not necessarily a book for, certainly it's a book for adults too, but like it wasn't a book written to adults. I still wanted it to be, well thought out and pour all of the same energy that she would have poured into it.
Hmm. It does not rhyme as your previous children's books do. And I'm just curious about that decision. Was that in part to make this book more emphatically Rachel's rather than your own? Or were there any other reasons why you chose to craft the words in the way that you do?
Well, I honestly think that I don't think from what I can gather from Rachel's original idea is that she did not intend it to rhyme. And I wanted my goal and hope was to finish this work, but finish it in a way that sort of really allowed Rachel to shine. I wanted people to read this book and hopefully hear Rachel. When we were sharing it with a few of her friends, like without even asking them, one of the things that a couple of them said was that, my gosh, Matthew, this book, I swear, I know that you helped write it, but like, I don't hear you at all. Like, yeah, I hear Rachel. And that is like the most beautiful compliment that one can give me with this regarding this book, because I really wanted Rachel's voice to shine. And because she, from everything I can tell, like, she just did not plan for this book to rhyme, I just decided we weren't going to do it that way. And because I had become known, the books that I do for kids, I am known for my rhyming. I think that it was, in order for me to embrace Rachel's voice, I felt like it was necessary for me not to let it rhyme.
Well, I love the way that you chose your words, and are poetic in a sense, I mean, in a very deep sense, without the rhyme. And
There's a rhythm to it. You know, there's certainly a it is, each page follows the same meter in some ways. So it's still poetic. It just doesn't rhyme, as you know, like my books do. But it it still has a very I wanted it to sing, and hopefully that's how I framed those questions and the statements that follow. I hope it does sing in a with a meter or with a beat. Mm. And so
I think it really does. Just to give our listeners one brief example, one page of the book says this: God is like the flame of a candle, warm and inviting. With God close by, you can look to the light and see through the darkest of nights. I mean, that's poetic, and even without the rhyme, and just beautifully conceived. We've not yet talked about the exquisite visuals of this book. I want you to tell our listeners about the talented illustrator who plays really an indispensable role in the ultimate beauty of this book.
Well, working with Yingwei Tan was just one of the most glorious parts of this project, because Yingwei is from Malaysia. She lives in the UK, and she really captured the vision that that I and Rachel's husband Dan kind of like put forth. And as we watched this project, we got pencil drawings, and then we got like pencil drawings with just a little bit of color, and then with each rendition of her vision for the book, like, we just started to see this big and epic, beautiful cast of characters, this beautiful like display of this mix of like real life with very much like wonder and imagined life. And it was just a really beautiful thing to see this book come to life visually. And I feel like she really takes Rachel's and my words and brings them to life in a way that is so full of color, and it's vivid, and it's at one moment wild and wild and chaotic, and then other times it's just intimate and very specific. And it's just I can't wait for people to see it. Like, it's just so beautiful.
Do you sense that writing this book, finishing Rachel's work, has in a sense affected the way you will do this work from this point on? I mean, has this in any way shifted or altered your perspective in terms of what is most important in crafting beautiful and fun and meaningful children's books?
Well, I think that I think this experience has changed me to some degree. Like, I think it has been a very moving and healing and hope-filled experience for me. So I think that in and of itself will lend itself to how I create in the future. As far as how it changes what I do, like, and how I do it, I don't know. I'll probably still keep writing books in rhyme, I think it has changed me spiritually. Like, I think that's where it will have an impact. And because I have yet to write it, like, I am in the process of writing my next book after this one. So it's, we'll see. Mm-hmm. That's a really great question. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of how that plays out. But I don't know yet.
Hmm.
How it will change my craft anyway.
Right. The book, again, is What Is God Like? It is published by Convergent Books. We are recording this interview on Monday the 14th, and the book actually is released to the world on the 15th. And
yes,
our listeners are hearing this broadcast on Wednesday the 16th with the book already out into the world. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Matthew Paul Turner, who, as we've just been talking about, very carefully and sensitively finished the work begun by the beloved author, Rachel Held Evans, who sadly passed away in 2019, suddenly and unexpectedly at the age of 37. And her final book, in a sense, and Matthew Paul Turner's most recent, What Is God Like? Matthew Paul Turner, you have a long career that has involved a lot of different writing. You also have a career that generated headlines of a very different nature, of course, not too long ago. And that was when you, in a sense, made an announcement to the world about who you are. I wonder if you would tell our listeners about this really important moment in your life and what brought you to this point in your life.
Well, it's last July, 2020, I announced on social media that I was a gay man, and that I had always been a gay man, but that I had never, while I had found freedom to inspire other people to live their truth, and to be known and loved by God, to feel loved and known by God, I had never gotten to a place where I could do that. I was raised in a very, very conservative Christian church. I mean, to give you an idea, I had Barbies burned in front of me to explain hell as a kid. So I was very much, my faith was laced in fear and in shame. And I, even though I knew I was gay by the time I was 16 or 17, I could, the idea of being myself and living my truth there was no way for me to get to a place where I could experience that. And so I went to college and I, you know, ended up getting married, marrying my best friend, my wife, Jessica. And we had three kids, and it wasn't until 2019, very much right around the time Rachel was in the hospital, I was going through a great battle with depression, and just really had really kind of lost myself a little bit. And it was in that process that I eventually came out to my wife. We were both in therapy, counseling, and over time, it took us a year to really kind of decide what our next steps would be. And Jessica has, I can honestly say that without Jessica being involved in my story, I would not have been able to find, I don't think I would have been able to find the strength to do what I knew needed to be done. And so Jessica and I actually made the announcement together that we were, that I was coming out, and that we were ending our marriage, but that we were ending it on the basis of a sincere love and gratitude for each other and a friendship that would still, carry on. And, you know, now we live in two different houses now, we are wonderful co-parents. We are very much best friends, and though it's been a hard road, no doubt, there has been a lot of healing in the last year. There's been a lot of hope that we've found along the way. And I have, I can't tell you how much joy and how much joy and acceptance and light I have felt in my own life, just being able to be myself for the first time. as a 40-something-year-old man. And it's been a beautiful journey.
Did you have any fears about what this might mean for you professionally? Did you fear that there might be ramifications of any kind for you in terms of your your
of
voice
course,
in the world?
Yes. I did. I thought that I wasn't sure that that I would have a career, like at least a career that looked anything like the one that I had. But I knew that my publisher was behind me. I knew that I had a lot of people cheering for me, but I didn't know whether or not people would continue buying books about God from somebody who had come out as gay. And I have been blown away by the love and acceptance that I've received from my fan base, from the people who have bought my books over and over again. And so it is, while I'm sure that there are people out there that wouldn't think of or consider buying my book because on the basis of my orientation, I don't hear from those people, at least not very often. I mean, I did at the very beginning, don't get me wrong. When I first came out, like it was a wild journey. But like for the most part, I have had a very positive and life-giving experience of, you know, coming into my own truth. And, you know, I've received, for the most part, love and acceptance. Certainly that's not like 100% across the board, but I've been blown away by the fact that not only do I still have a career, my career's still thriving, that people are still buying my books. My new book is out and it's doing really well, and it's I feel really blessed to be able to live my truth and get to do what I do.
I hope this isn't too personal a question. You are a father of, I think, two children. Am I right?
Three kids.
Three children, and I don't know of what age they are, that they're in a position to really understand any of this. Can you just say a quick word about that particular challenge of sharing this with them? And I'm mostly asking because that it might be helpful for someone else who maybe finds themselves in a similar situation.
Absolutely. I have three kids. My oldest is Elias, and he's almost 13. My middle child is Adeline, and she will be 10 in a few days. And then I have Ezra, who is 6 and a half. And I told them that it was a year ago that I told them that I was gay. 1 year ago, actually this week. And my kids have been the most supportive, the most loving, the most hope filled part of this journey. Like, they have supported and were they sad that mommy and daddy were, you know, not going to be married anymore? Absolutely. I mean, there was real pain and real hardship that we had to walk through. But the thing that I have found is that the love that my kids have shown me has like been life-giving. They asked wonderful questions, and I answered them honestly. And it was many of the fears that I was consumed by for so long. My kids broke down. My kids broke those fears down. My kids gave me the ability to see a different story, to be less afraid, and they're doing really, really well. And we've all adjusted to this new story. And while it's certainly like everybody's story. And when it changes, it has there are challenges that we're still walking through. But we have always given space and time for our kids to talk about their story, talk about their challenges, and talk about how they're feeling. And in those and in those conversations, we've always found love and life. And it has been, when they're older, I would want them to be able to express their own experience of it all. But from my perspective, they have, it has been a beautiful thing for all of us to walk through. Even though it's been hard at times, it has been a powerful and, lovely journey. And my daughter can't walk past the rainbow without pointing at me and saying, "Daddy, look." So it's been that's been a beautiful thing. So
Matthew Paul Turner, and by the way, in a blog that you wrote several years ago, you wrote these words: "Nothing fights fear like beauty." And I love those words. Maybe someday we can have a conversation about what is behind them. But I know you believe them. I believe those words as well. And I so appreciate this exquisite new book that comes to you from and from the genius of Rachel Held Evans, What Is God Like?, published by Convergent Publishing. Matthew Paul Turner, thank you so much for making time for this conversation. Thank you, and best wishes to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, it's Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the program, and with her, Matthew Collins, who is Director of Parks for the Kenosha County Division of Parks. We'll talk overall about the park system in Kenosha County, but we will focus particularly on some of the restoration work being done in Petrifying Springs, what has already been accomplished and what there is still to come. That's tomorrow on The Morning Show. Friday's morning show is still taking shape, but it will for sure include an re-airing of a memorable conversation that I recorded way back in 2006 with the late Tim Russert, longtime host of Meet the Press and the Washington bureau chief for NBC News. We'll be talking about his book called Wisdom of Our Fathers, which draws upon all kinds of letters which Tim Russert received after releasing a book about his relationship with his own father. He heard from over 60,000 people from across the country with stories about their relationship with their own fathers, and he gathered a few of the most memorable and interesting into this intriguing book. And so just in time for Father's Day, we'll share that interview with you on Friday's morning show. We'll spend part of Monday's morning show talking about Beachside Author Fest, an absolutely wonderful event which occurs in Lake Geneva in early July. And this event is going to be an opportunity to meet a wide array of local authors. And there's room for more authors to become part of this. We'll hear from someone from both the Lake Geneva Public Library and from their friends group talking about this really terrific event. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.org, and available 7 days a week as a podcast. Be sure to look for The Morning Show with